Hello!
Hello.
Oh, hang on. Pull something unusual out of the bag.
Sorry.
Our apologies, listeners.
Dramatic.
That wasn't the ending you expected, was it? Well, the ending I expected, really.
Welcome to Boogie Banter. Be grateful you're not here.
I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm John Sams.
And I'm Jenny Masters.
This week, slightly different.
Don't start that again.
Okay, that way madness lies. Yes, we're going to talk about a film that we talked about last week, which is the first time we've done that, I think, isn't it?
Yeah,
we've done
so.
A special on a whole film, like Back to the Future, but that's normally been a film that's been out for some time.
Yes.
But this was a film we were so taken by, we thought we would talk about
Inception. We're putting the idea into your mind that we're going to talk about this film.
The podcast is going into your head via ears.
But we feel it warranted its own special, mainly because, not even in terms of spoilers as such, but just that there's a lot to talk about in the film, and so we thought we'd give it its own special where you can just let rip on all sorts of different things about it.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen it, and then you worry about the spoilers, then don't listen to this.
Stop.
Go and watch it and then come back.
Spoilers lie hereafter.
Exactly. We're going to be talking unfettered about the film.
If you haven't heard last week's episode, we talked about it then, spoiler-free. So you can go back and listen to that one.
Although the end result was pretty much just, go and see it because it's really good.
And actually, to be fair, I reckon you could have not seen it and listened to this episode. You wouldn't get what we're talking about so much. But it's not, even though there are spoilers, I think it's so visually good.
Yeah,
true. I don't think you'd... Yes. I think you'd still enjoy it. I can't see that you'd go, oh, this means nothing to me now.
And also, because it's not so much plot twist that gets spoiled, because you end up with different ideas taken away from it.
Yeah.
So even if someone says, yeah, I saw it and I took this away from it, you might go and see it and take away something else completely.
Yeah.
But still, just giving you fair warning.
In fact, I think that the biggest spoiler that there seems to be for this film is actually not a typical spoiler, but actually just hearing how good it is. Because I've heard of a few people who've gone to see it and went, well, it was all right, but it wasn't as good as I hoped.
Yes.
And these are the people who've been non-stop talking about it for the last 2 months, far before I've even heard of it.
Mm.
And they've hyped themselves up so much that then they go, well, it was...
Yeah, it's what I'm trying to do now. I was talking to people last night, actually, saying, and they said, oh, should I go and see Inception? Is it good? And I said, it is really good. But then had to rein myself in a bit and said, but keep your expectations normal, because otherwise everyone's going to be saying how good it is, and then that might just hype it up. Because then you start... thinking what you are going to expect.
Yes.
And then if it doesn't live up to that, or if it's something slightly different, then it's wrong.
Well, we had we'll disperse emails throughout the episode, perhaps.
Okay.
We had one from Matt Rowbottom who says, I thought it was really good, but nowhere near as hard to follow as some people said it was.
Yeah.
Did love it, but it didn't blow my mind quite like I thought it would.
Mm.
Almost wish I didn't know anything about it and just watched it on a whim, or found it at the bottom shelf of a video shop and thought I'd give it a go. I feel it would have had a much more of an impact on me that way, a little bit like Memento did.
Mm.
Yeah.
Bless him for harking back to the days of a video shop. I remember those.
Yeah. Well, this is what I touched on last week, saying that I quite like the fact that it doesn't delve into it saying, oh, we're going to try and disturb your entire world and revamp how you see everything. And it's not really, it's just this one limited story and the people involved.
Yeah.
And sort of, what dreams are like, but it doesn't try and, rework how you see the world completely, because it's just about dreams.
I think I'm glad that I went in. I hadn't seen a trailer. I'd seen a poster. That was it. Mm. And I'd heard good things, but I'd tried to ignore those and thought, I know nothing about it. I will see it as, I think, 12 Monkeys, I think, was the first film I saw like that, where I just knew nothing and therefore came out going, very, very good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I didn't know anything. So I think that's a good way to see it. So if you haven't seen it yet, then, shame on you, because you've missed the window.
Well,
and now you'll have heard that it's impossibly
brilliant.
You'll
have heard too much.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. See, weirdly, because I and Jen have now seen it twice, because I think it warranted it. And the second time around clarified a lot of stuff for me, but in a way that sort of took the fun out of it to a degree. I think the first time around, saw it with about 8 other people, and we all came away thinking, what about this, or this, and different ideas and stuff going on. And then the second time around, sort of was looking out for more things, and then was understanding it more, and you realise they explain stuff which makes more sense the second time around. And so it came by thinking, I'm now fairly certain about the ending and everything else. And so as a result, it takes the fun out of it slightly, because I feel there's less up for debate, kind of. But there still is to a degree.
Yes, but that's kind of just our own fault for watching both together in quick succession.
Well, that's true.
And really with your eagle eyes.
Well, that's true, yes. The first time I saw it, I did spend about an hour online that evening, reading up different theories online.
Right.
And really, it was quite interesting seeing that... Roughly speaking, it divided into some people I think were just wrong, or saying, oh, clearly I can't even think of any, but really weird theories that weren't borne out by any ideas, or misremembering things in the film.
Right.
For example, well, I feel we've been talking around specifics.
I think we have.
Yeah, we'll dig into specifics. Yeah. For example, at the very end...
Spoilers now!
At the very end, the top wobbles. And
the top wobbles.
Yes,
the spinning top. Have you seen the film?
Sorry, I think about the very top of the screen.
Oh, I see. No, the top, the spinning.
Like it's all a dream. That's the kind of the
Christian Nolan version of it crashing out the end.
That's him pitching it to the executives, saying, "Well, just got to go."
No, but at the end, it wobbles and looks like it's going to fall over. But the brilliant, it cuts at the perfect point where it's still not necessarily. But various people online are saying, oh, but the top fell over at the end, and so this happens.
Yeah.
And people say, no, but it didn't fall over. I definitely remember seeing it hit the ground.
It didn't.
Yeah, but people thinking they've seen things that they actually haven't, which fits in with the whole tone of the film. And then other people with weird and wild theories that aren't borne out. And then some people with things that I'd seen and thought, oh, yes, okay. Other people agree with that. And then also people who had seen things that I hadn't noticed at all, which then I looked for the second time around, such as Leonardo DiCaprio's wedding ring. Which, whenever he's in the dream world, he's wearing a wedding ring.
Right.
And whenever he is in the real world, he's not.
Oh, really?
And that is borne out to the end as well. At the end, he's not wearing a wedding ring.
Which means that the...
The wedding ring, the very end is possibly the real world.
Oh!
But, the thing is, the whole point of that... the whole point of the final scenes, I think, with Mal is him coming to terms...
Well, yes, it's
with
still...
her loss. So even if he was dreaming, he could have mentally got rid of the wedding ring.
Yes, no, that it still leaves open that window. No, it's still not a definite. But equally, the top falling over, people seem to again a lot of people online seem to be thinking, but if the top falls over, then you're in the real world. If it stays spinning, you're not. But that's not what he says. He says the whole point of that having your own totem is that only you know what it does on the weight, or no, not even what it does, but the weight and the feel of it, so you know if it feels right. Much like the carpet, Saito gets that the carpet is wrong because he feels it and he knows what the carpet should be like. But people seem to have taken away the idea of saying, if the top falls over, you're in the real world. It's like, that's not it. That just means you're not seeing someone else's dream.
Yes.
Leonardo DiCaprio could still arguably be in his own dream.
True.
Why the top doesn't fall
over. Is there not also an argument that he's. I've only seen it once. I'm trying to remember that the fact that he leaves the top spinning on the table and walks away from it isn't the idea you're meant to keep it on you, your totem, and so the fact that he's walked away from it also means he's sort of, whether he's in a dream or in reality, he's walked away from ever leaving that. Is that sort of
yeah? I think so, or at least the whole point is you're meant to not let anyone else touch it, because then if you're then in their dream, they'll know what it does. So the fact that he's left it. Oh, admittedly, it's only Michael Caine there, so he probably trusts him. But the fact that if nothing else, he hasn't stayed to see whether it falls over or not. Yeah. So he clearly doesn't care, and he's quite happy. But then something else about, again, people misremembering, which I was looking for specifically this time around, is the children at the end.
Mm.
And in fact, Connor Tyrrell sent a message, what was the deal with Cobb's kids looking the same at the end? Was he still dreaming? And that's, again, why it's quite... You'll look at the same at the end. Well, this is the thing.
They're doing the same action, and it's always from, from behind. We see them.
Also, the clothes. I mean, the first time around, you sort of only see them in a little glimpse, and at the end, you think, they look exactly the same. Then, if you're really looking in quite an anal way, you realise the clothes are very similar, but slightly different.
For example, the little girl's wearing a T-shirt underneath her dress.
And the little boy, in the dreams, we see he's got quite a thick red stripe down the middle of the back of his shirt. And that's not there
Trying to remember, I think the boy actually had a different shirt from the first time we saw him, so there could even be another change. So that could just be the projection of Cobb putting his children in children's clothes. So it could shift every time.
It's not
anyway.
The point that because he sees their faces that he's therefore definitely...
Well, but again, because that's something else that isn't entirely explained whether... Because I think in part... Because Mal tries to get him to look at the kids' faces at one point and he deliberately turns away.
Yeah.
And I think in part that's him not... It's not that he can't remember his children's faces, but he's choosing not to, because as soon as he sees them...
He may not want to leave.
Yeah.
I see.
And so I think... So the fact that he willingly chooses to see his kid's face at the end, again, doesn't necessarily mean it's the real world, but at least implies that he thinks it's the real world.
Yes, okay.
But I'm increasingly convinced that what we see is what is reality. So what we are told is the real world the whole way through the film is actually real.
Mm. Yes.
But it's
a delicious kind of test.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit of ambiguity.
No, absolutely. And there's an argument to be made for different different interpretations. But I think you can get too, again, going online, lots of people were getting caught up in saying, ah, the whole thing is Saito's dream and it's all a construct to make Leonardo DiCaprio get over Mal, and delving into it. And you think, well, there's no real evidence for that.
Mm.
That doesn't really back it up. You can theorise that Michael Caine possibly recruited Ariadne, well, not Juno, Ellen Page.
Ellen Page.
Sort of deliberately recruited her in order to help his son, or his, well, son-in-law, get over Mal.
True.
Possibly. Because, you know, she goes away and then comes back. And, you can theorise behind the scenes that he went to her and said, oh, why are you doing this job? Because I think you should. I reckon you could actually do a dual purpose and then you could plant the idea of getting over Mal. And you can, that could happen, but I don't think it's plot shifting either way.
I'm only laughing because there's so many points where it's like, okay, don't think about Mal. Mal, don't think about Mal. Mal, Mal, don't think about her. Mal. Stop saying Mal! No wonder there's a sodding train crashing through the place.
True. Except I think the whole point is that how the dream world works, that your subconscious shouldn't start, even if you talk about it, it shouldn't get involved.
Mal. But
clearly something I'm going on.
Stop saying it! That amused me.
Well, yes.
I forgot about the train crashing through. It's things like that. It's why I particularly enjoyed it. The fact that it's sort of like, it is a sci-fi sort of film, but not spaceship and alien sci-fi. It's just sort of, we can put a train through the middle of New York. Why not?
Yeah.
And they do it very well, and it looks visually.
Yeah. And even the second time around, I forgot that it was coming and jumped slightly when it happens. Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, and the grooves that it leaves behind in the tarmac, it's just come from nowhere.
Yeah, completely.
But it's nice actually watching it again, the references to the train that keep on coming up all the way through.
Because at the very start, they're on a train, the first job they do.
Mm.
Once you come completely out of the dream world, then they're on a train with Saito, and then they unplug themselves and run away. And Leonardo DiCaprio says, no, I'm going to get off at the next stop, I don't like trains, and gets off. And the first time, you don't think anything more about it, it just doesn't even register, because it's just a line. And then only half an hour plus later, you start thinking, hang on, trains are actually involved in his dreams.
Quite a lot. Clever, like, even when he's in his lift, in his dreams, going in between layers, there was the train crashing through before the basement. That happen.
Yeah,
as well.
Do, don't you?
Which is obviously...
It's very clever, isn't it? Christopher Nolan's very good. He's the best of the Nolan sisters.
He's gone from strength to strength.
A bit quiet, and I don't feel like... Was it I Feel Like Dancing?
Yes.
Was that the Nolans? I think it was.
He's on back. He's just one of the dancers.
He's a bit quiet, no, the drummer. But like in The Cause. But he thought, my moment will come. I'm brewing an idea here. Go on, sisters.
There's another that sort of in-depth thing about the cleverness of it. A video has just popped up on YouTube comparing the music. Mm. And because Je ne regrette rien comes up as a song. Hold on, they're turning into the Goons. But Hans Zimmer, apparently this isn't really a secret, because Hans Zimmer mentioned it in an interview beforehand, but actually seeing it in the video is quite good. Mm. How the music, if you slow down Je ne regrette rien, or the very start of it, when you get sort of a beat going, if they slowed that down a lot, and then that's a recurring theme in the score.
And
got a message from Jed saying, not usually a fan of Hans Zimmer, but this completely freaked me out. And I can see it, because it didn't occur to me at all. Because why would it really? Because it's a lot slower. And also, apparently, the same interview with Hans Zimmer, he said that the first and last notes that you hear in the film on the score are the same. So the whole thing is like a loop.
Oh, really?
Does actually make me want to go and see it again.
Just for the music now.
Well, no, because it could. Because obviously the point is that in the dream world, they play this song to bring you, to make you aware that you're about to get the kick. So if we're watching the film again and listened out for that music, that could be the overriding dream music. So that could be interesting.
True.
But also, why that song?
It's a good little song.
It's a great song.
It adds to that list. There's only a list of about 8 songs, maybe, I can think of, that are sort of have been used hauntingly in things.
Mm.
So there's like that one, and there's
Power of Love by Huey Lewis, obviously.
Hauntingly? Back to the Future, All a Dream.
Yeah.
Whenever he hears that, Marty wakes up.
All ghosts.
It's all dream within a dream.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of those. I can't think of any of them now, but there's 12 Monkeys had a couple of songs, I think, didn't it, that was always hauntingly used. And in Lost, I know you guys haven't really seen much of Lost, but there's Mama Cass' song, Make Your Own Kind of Music, which is again played again and again as a kind of, ooh, that's a familiar but unfamiliar. Kind of, it's kind of good.
Because the song itself is about regrets, and I would do it all over again if I had you.
It's a good choice.
If I had you. And the French aspect, I don't know. It's
and the fact that Edith Piaf's in the film. Is
yes, as Marion Cotillard. Yeah, which is apparently a complete coincidence.
Edith Plouffe.
And when she was cast, they said, oh, so is that going to distract people? Yeah. Should we just not do it? And then they said, no, we'll keep it
they
in.
They just add to it, if anything.
Yeah. But again, that's just them. It's quite nice that they're worried that people might read so much into it, or they know it's that sort of film.
Where
they're,
gonna... need,
they're being aware, no. always being aware of the film knowledge of their audience.
Yeah.
That people might be distracted by the fact that she was in essentially a fairly obscure film. Well, it was Oscar nominated, but not that many, not that many people who've seen Inception will necessarily have seen. I mean, I haven't.
I like the idea that you're in the dream and Leo's there, and suddenly you hear the and the camera just pans across, and it's Marianne Cotillard in the corner just going, just singing. And you go, will you shut up, please?
Exactly.
Please,
wrong film, Mal. Get with the moment. Yes. Other. What?
Oops, no, it's just about the subject matter of that song, and obviously. The argument that this is all in Cobb's world, and the fact that the main struggle for him, for that side of the story anyway, is literally coming to terms with his guilt and his regret and actually letting his projection of her go and accepting the fact that it's not real, that she he says at the end, that I can't imagine you with all your complexities.
Just a shade.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is lovely, and it's what just... finally, to allow himself to stop being gnawed away at by her.
But you'd have thought he might have twigged that earlier on when she kept popping into his dreams and killing his friends, personally.
That was a bit
he started thinking, she's not the real Mal.
Ex-girlfriends have problems, but...
But this is it. It's also conscious, isn't it? So it's about literally relaxing.
Yeah, he needs to be willing to go into subconscious. Well, that's something else, which, again, makes slightly more sense the second time around, is how the nature of limbo, or what they refer to as limbo... And because some people were theorising it was like a sort of a almost a supernatural, universal subconscious state.
Mm.
And they don't explicitly state, but the implication is, that I took anyway, is that essentially it's sort of a collective the collective subconscious of everyone plugged into that machine at the same time.
Mm.
And so it's you go far enough down that you're all in there together. Mm. And whoever's been there before, whatever they built is there. Because I think they describe it as something like unconstructed dream space.
Yes.
So whereas levels 1 to 3, they built the levels, and so you're contained within that region. Mm. In limbo, there is no. But I don't know. So I don't know if you built a level for limbo, if you could then make it.
Yeah.
Into something. I suppose you could have built it when you're in there.
I guess so. Yeah. So that's obviously the first thing we see in the film is that
is him washing up on the shores.
Someone made the point that. It does look a little bit like the sequel to Titanic when the film first starts.
True.
It looks like it's what I'm going to do. I'll never let go, Jack. You bloody did!
At least I've thawed. Turns out looking for Kate Winslet and finds Ken Watanabe instead.
Leonardo DiCaprio must have strange dreams himself, because he's either, in Titanic doing that, or in Shutter Island he's sort of, again...
islands.
Does he arrive by ferry on an island or on a shore, or is he drowned in an iceberg? It's very confusing, that point.
Mm.
On the beach,
Well, yeah.
He's obsessed with these things.
Eating Gilbert Grape? No.
That's a good point, that. Well, I don't know. Let's discuss. In that limbo for, Seiko.
Sorry, Paul's just done a short limbo.
Sorry.
So just imagine that, and then once the horrors stop, join us.
Be glad I wasn't going to get the mic stand and do a bit of under it, but I thought that would just...
I'd like to see you try, frankly.
You think?
That would be immensely entertaining. Okay.
But he...
Sorry, I asked you.
But he has bodyguards. Has he actually... Because nowhere else in limbo are there other people other than the main characters who are connected directly...
Yes,
to the dream.
But that's because while it may not be that their subconscious fills it like other areas, you can build what you want. So
and people,
I don't see why not.
Well, the fact is, why
Leonardo DiCaprio's children are there.
As a memory, aren't they, or as a dream?
No, they're not in limbo.
Yeah, they are.
No,
why not?
No,
do you not see them at some point? No, fair enough.
Isn't that the point where Mal says, look, they're over here, and he goes, no, I shall not look.
But that's not in limbo.
Is that not in limbo?
No.
Is it not?
I don't think so.
I think before she stabs him, then she might sort of point out that they're over in a corner.
Yeah, but we don't see them.
Hmm.
The fact that she's a projection as well of
very true. So, yeah. So you can get people. See, you've undermined your own. You've hoisted yourself by your own petard. Yeah, but again, that raises, again, raises questions as to the nature of exactly how things work, which you can delve into or not. And yeah, I mean, my understanding was that, yeah, that Leonardo DiCaprio and Mal, I'm interchanging characters and people and stuff, they, when they were in limbo for 50-ish years, building this entire city, they didn't want, arguably, why didn't they want their children there? They just get away from the kids.
Yeah, I know.
But
because when they remembered them, they were already middle-aged and they thought it would be terrifying.
True.
He built a creche across town.
Mind you, actually, except we don't know, again, we don't know if when they go into the dream world the first time, if they may not have had children. It might have been that they came out of limbo.
Yeah, true.
And then, you know, a few years went by, which she was constantly struggling with, and they had children.
Well, no, because she's like, these are our, remember, because she's there saying, these aren't our children, don't you think I know my own children?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yes. So then she would have thought
she must have had them before.
Yeah, good point.
Confused. Might have seen it once.
Fair.
And that was a mother and baby screening. I was going to go and see it again in IMAX this week, but I didn't get the chance to.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really good idea.
I think Chris Nolan said that there's the whole. I think the next Batman film is his next project, and they're toying with the idea of filming the whole thing in IMAX.
Righty.
Because I don't know about Inception, I know bits of The Dark Knight were filmed in IMAX, but bits weren't, and this is probably the same.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but we're getting slightly off topic.
Actually, one thing on that is that, even though, because I'm a bit lost, to be honest, in some of the things you've just said. I saw it a week ago, and there were kids going, and I think they're enjoying it. But, yes, but no, I'm a bit lost, but I kind of didn't mind it, because sort of film where you kind of meant to get a bit lost, I think.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the whole, you can watch it, I may have made this point last week, but you can watch the film through, and apart from just generally keeping track of the different dream levels, say, all right, so that's happening faster, this happening slower, okay, and just keeping it. Mm. The general plot and through line of it all is relatively straightforward.
Mm. Yeah.
And so you should come out the other end and just think, okay, this happened. Essentially, you should come out thinking it was all a dream, or it isn't a dream, they're back in reality.
Yeah.
Brilliant, off we go. But then when you start thinking about all the different layers and interactions and how things work, it's all there to be thought about, if you can be bothered.
It's explained well.
Yeah.
It's not The Fountain or The Nines.
Which I've still never seen The Fountain.
Films that you walk away going, well, I have no idea what happened.
Yeah.
You can walk away, you will know what happened.
Yes, no one should come out of, no one should come out of this and just say, oh, it made no sense, because it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And it's only there are layers to unpeel if you choose
to. As Simon Mayo said on his film review thing, that he sort of was happy to get lost because he felt he was getting lost in good company, because the other characters and the actors, they're all sort of going, well, we don't quite know either.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact, I think even on the poster, the word Inception is kind of labyrinthine and mazy. And of course, there's this whole thing in the film that Ellen Page's character, you know, she's building this maze kind of thing to be the architect of it all. So... yeah, you may get a bit lost, but just enjoy the ride, really.
Well, this is it. I think we said last time the key word is trust. We trust that we're going to get to where we're going.
Exactly. And you trust that he knows.
Reference to the... oh, you're on a train.
Oh, yes.
You don't know where you're going.
Well, so you think you watch the chapter, you end up dead. That's a bit harsh.
No.
Incidentally, on that, my brother emailed, said, I thought it was very entertaining, really enjoyed it, mostly understood it. Reckon to enjoy it the most, you need to not get hung up on the confusing bits and just go with it.
Yeah. Talking to friends of ours, we're all sort of interested in, like, the mechanics of how the dream world works. And, like, you know, the machine that they hook into is never explained. It's just, here you go, here's the machine, you hook in, dream world.
Yeah.
Which is the, I think it's the right way of doing it, because otherwise you get bogged down in, you know, 20 minutes of, oh, what happens, you get a machine, you need these compounds, this affects the... And then partly it ends up being quite boring explaining how it works. And also it sort of prevents discussions about how you think it works, which makes it quite...
Yeah,
but also
nice.
It's not necessary to telling the story.
No.
You just need to accept they go into the dream world. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
And then if you want to, you afterwards go to the pub and discuss how you think it all works.
It's
brilliant.
It's not a sci-fi film that is about the science. Really.
Yeah, they don't need to explain the mechanics. They just said, oh, the military developed it for
which
training.
Which is great, because that can get in the way sometimes. I mean, some films embrace it. You watch a Star Trek film, they love to, you know, say, oh, turn the knob weasel to the left, and I haven't seen Star Trek much.
Knob weasel?
I don't know. But they do that
never,
stuff.
Never get a pet, Paul.
And they... they blind you with science. That's all I'm saying. And the knob weasel.
They're blinding knob weasels?
Yeah, they do.
You're saying they test on animals in the Star Trek universe?
Turn the blind knob weasel. He won't know where he's going. Just end him in that direction.
Him into a wall.
Bang.
That's a good example. Because then in Star Trek, then you get lots of people saying, oh, hang on, but you're in one film, you did this, and you did made this combination. And then, so you end up with lots of mistakes and contradictions. And so leaving that out completely means you can't get lost in that.
Exactly.
Because...
Mainly because there is absolutely no way of doing this. There's no way of creating sort of
synchronized... We know of. The military might be doing it the as military, we speak.
The government. but, yeah, which is fine because you go, okay, we don't actually need to know the ins and outs because if you try to attempt giving us the specific details, it would probably fall apart.
Yeah,
so,
we'll end up just thinking, that would never work because of history. Whereas you get presented with a closed suitcase with a few buttons on it. Yeah. Oh, there you go, this works.
I quite like the fact as well, it looks, it's kind of present day, isn't it? It's, there's no hint that this is, we're in the 20, the year is 2025 and everyone can float. It's not. It's none of that, you know.
Yeah.
It's just actually people can float in the hotel bit.
Yeah, but only
which
dreams.
Is
but,
cool. I mean, it's good. Yeah.
They filmed
effects.
That real for real, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they must have. Yeah, it's just a big wire. Turning gimbal. Yeah,
very cool.
Well, to be honest, I mean, it's like they did in 2001. They had the same thing, so it's not new as such. But they probably didn't do it with that much wire work.
Well, Christopher Nolan said he deliberately was not going to do as little CGI as possible, even though the CGI in it is very good.
Mm. Yeah,
buildings falling on themselves.
That's
I'm pretty sure
about.
That wasn't.
They probably didn't fold
staged.
Paris in half. Yeah.
Which is quite good. I'm going to be a bit of a pedant, but when the road folds in on itself,
very cool.
That is awesome. And you see it go slightly darker. But you're thinking, if you're actually going to apply science to it, then it would go completely black. There'd be no
where's
sky.
Where's the light coming from?
Where is this light coming from?
But that's the point about the dream world.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah.
A bit weird.
There is no sourcing of stuff in dreams. It just happens.
It's just there.
Yeah.
I think my favourite, just before that, I think, is when they're in the cafe and the shards.
Oh, everything's exploding.
Oh, that's
just
beautiful.
Wonderfully
see, that,
beautifully
see,
slow.
That must be at least significantly CGI, because they couldn't explode stuff around. And yet, a lot of it looks like they probably just blew lots of stuff up.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be at all surprised if they blew everything up and then just the people were composited in afterwards. Mm.
Yes.
Rather than actually CGIing the carnage itself.
If they just said, right, Leo, Ellen, can you just stay very still?
Yeah. Cover your
don't
eyes.
Don't mind the glass. Yeah.
It's fine. We're going to blind you like the famous Knobweasel.
Is that the sequel? The famous Knobweasel.
Yeah. It's the cheaper version of Famous Grouse.
Is that right? Yeah. Oh, dear. That's
yeah.
Very cheap,
oh, only
it?
Small glasses.
I wouldn't have that. I wouldn't have that. my brother actually said at the end of his email, Mark said, and my old EA, as in Electronic Arts, the computer games company, Chertsey office, is in it when they're walking around those impossible steps.
Mm.
So that's the bit in the office, isn't
it?
Yeah.
It looks like
it's the when the secretary spills the papers and they walk past her several times.
That's right. And then you pan down and go, I see. Yes, so if you kept walking, you'd fall off the top.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't know how we got to work each day, to be honest.
Well, it's weird. Whoever designed that office. Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, it works well for the film. So.
Why says my old office? I've left. It's too much of a hazard.
The
thing is, Chertsey, right? Yeah. It's not that far away from us.
Yeah.
Hollywood, right? Very far away.
Yeah, I don't know where Inception was filmed, actually.
I don't know where it was filmed.
Probably,
but
I wouldn't be surprised if it was Pinewood.
Well, the Dark Knight was largely filmed on Chobham Common, just near my parents' house.
Yeah.
Just down the road.
Because they crashed a Batmobile in was it Brooklands or something, which is near us.
There's one of the bat suits is... stored in Thorpe Park somewhere.
Oh, really?
The theme park. Below a roller coaster in a cupboard. Just because, I don't know, they've got a bit of storage there.
Because a lot of films are filmed in London, so because we're just outside London, we're sort of handy for countryside bits and clearly interesting-looking office buildings.
Yeah, there you are.
Yeah. There's one point which I either read on the Internet Movie Database or elsewhere, pointing out that Cillian Murphy, who plays the good guy, or sort of the good guy in this, he'd been in Christopher Nolan's three last films. He was in this, and he was in Batman Begins, and he was in The Dark Knight. And in all three films, he spends a reasonable portion of the film with a cloth bag over his head.
Nice.
Which is just, in various contexts...
Talk about being typecast.
Exactly, but Christopher Nolan clearly just, you know, you're a brilliant actor, but I hate how you look. Put a bag on your head.
He's your go-to guy for cloth head parts.
Exactly. If you need someone to be bagged.
And it's nice seeing him playing this... you say a good guy.
Yeah, he's quite gentle
he's nice.
And kind. And,
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
With no undertones of creepy weirdness.
No.
Yeah.
Which he definitely has given
which he can do very easily.
He is the antagonist, would you say? The protagonist being Leo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But he's the guy they're kind of. They're up against. He's sort of the bad guy in that.
Well, no, because they're not up against him. They're just trying.
Well, they want to trick
him.
They want to.
Yeah, but they're trying to trick him. So essentially, they're the antagonist, and he's the protagonist.
Well, exactly. But in terms of traditional film storytelling, Leonardo DiCaprio is sort of he's the anti-hero, isn't he? He's the him and but that's what kind of I found interesting as well because they're out. I kept thinking, okay, so there's Leonardo DiCaprio and this gang. It's kind of a bit like a heist film then suddenly. Yeah. It's a bit like they've got a job to get, one last job kind of thing. And but then throughout, I was sort of going, but isn't what they're doing, aren't they the baddies in this? They sort of are.
Yeah,
and
they
yet we're
are.
With them. And I was thinking at the end, there's going to be this big moral thing at some point where he gets the chance to, you know, implant this, this idea in the brain. And then, but doesn't, because he realises it's all wrong. And that actually, they've been set up by the businessman and all that.
Yeah, Saito.
And so surely, you know, it's all that what they're doing is wrong.
Yes. Actually, well, I haven't thought about that. But I think while it may be sort of morally wrong, I think the fact that, partly because we know why Leonardo DiCaprio is doing it, getting back to his kids and, you know, right a moral wrong, even though he sort of caused it in the first place.
Mm.
But Saito does make the point, which I wonder if it was put in just to counter this idea, that company, or Cillian Murphy's dad's company, is going to dominate all the energy market, and they're going to become a huge global monopoly. And
but doesn't this mean that Saito's now going to become...
No,
he said that their company, they're the only... Well, yeah, that's sort of... It's,
it implies that it's not a case of just general point rivalry between them. It's literally this one company is going to go too big.
Yeah, because he says something like, we're right. The only ones standing between them and complete domination. But
okay.
I can't remember the exact wording, but because I was wondering if you could read it as, essentially, we're huge, they're huge, we want them to be tiny, and then we'll take over everything.
Yeah.
But that it's worded in such a way that it implies, you know, Saito runs a huge company, but they're in different areas.
Yeah,
okay. They're the only ones who are capable of stopping them.
But either way, it didn't really matter, because although I was sort of kind of waiting for that throughout, this sort of the moral moment where they go, hey kids, don't do what we've just done.
Exactly.
If we could.
Don't try this on.
Okay.
With your dream equipment.
But actually, it didn't really happen, which I found kind of refreshing in a way, that actually it's not moralising and it's not sort of, you know, it's not one of those films.
Yeah. And also, I mean, because that didn't occur to me the whole way through. I was just thinking, hey, bad guys.
And generally, heist movie films are often, I mean, yeah, they don't have to be like the Mission Impossible type thing. They're a gang working for good. But a lot of heist films are about baddies, and it doesn't matter. We just you go with it. They're the anti-hero. Yeah.
It is. It was sort of robbing. That's something else that, because people stealing from other people is in the real world obviously a terrible thing. In film worlds, it's generally kind of a victimless crime. You're normally robbing for some huge faceless corporation. But in this thing, I've realised that, assuming that is all as we see it, and we end up in reality, no one dies. I don't think. Or no one is killed. Pete Postlethwaite dies of natural causes.
That's true.
But no one in the film is murdered.
He's wonderfully nasty, isn't he? He's
great. Yeah.
Again, playing quite against type, because he's lovely in other films.
But a major part, and he only has a couple of lines, and he's lying in bed for all of them.
Well, equally, Michael Caine, because before he came back at the end, I was thinking, is that it? Is he just sit in a classroom in Paris for a bit? Is that what he's doing, really?
Well, Christopher Nolan phoned up and said, oh, by the way, do you want five lines of a new film? Brilliant.
Yeah. And Michael Caine said, well, all right, but you have to come to me. I'm in a classroom, and I'm not going to move from my desk.
Right. I'll stay here. Just bring your crew in, it's fine. Yeah. I'm just looking at some papers, but that works, isn't it? Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. One other person I was going to mention is Tom Hardy in it, who was excellent as Eames.
I
was watching it thinking Jen would like
him. Well, it's just towards the end I went, I quite like
him. He's just nicely British.
Yes.
But not in a sort of pip-pip Hollywood way, but actually just sort of just gets on with it.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't drawn attention to.
It wasn't at all.
To it again, watching it again, I went, oh yeah, he's British, because it wasn't like, oh, hello, charm, I'm here.
No, it just happens to be.
Yeah.
And it
was good, because I've only seen him in Bronson.
Very
tough guy, very hard to watch prison film, and he's playing this real guy Bronson, and it's a very good performance.
He's a vicious,
really
psychopathic.
But I'm glad I've seen him in this, because having seen him in Bronson, he's so good as an actor in it, and he's toughed up for the part. You know, he's a big guy, and he is just, you know, killing people in prison. But it's filmed in such a way that it looks like he's doing it. It really, he looks like he's
ultimate
just this
method acting.
Nasty, nasty guy.
Yeah.
And actually, in this, he's lovely. So I'm kind of...
See, I'd only seen him
and
in...
very witty.
I'd only seen him in Star Trek Nemesis, where he's the bad guy in that, playing a young clone of Patrick Stewart. And he pulls it off quite well. And again, he's bad guy in that.
Yeah.
And obviously in a more sci-fi, not camp, but slightly lighter way. Very, very good in that. But it's annoying now, because then there are articles popping up online of people saying, oh, where's Tom Hardy suddenly come from? And you think,
well,
he's
been
working
long.
For years.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like Bradley Cooper, who's now, after The Hangover, is suddenly becoming more famous, A-Team and other things coming. People say, hey, rising star on the ascendancy. But he was in Alias about 9 years ago, playing not a minor part, he's sort of in the first series of that. So he's been working and doing stuff. Just because people haven't seen them doesn't mean they aren't out there doing good work.
No, exactly.
Yes. Mind you, Tom Hardy's now been floated vaguely, assuming MGM either goes bankrupt or has to tear up all Bond agreements and start from scratch again. Which is why Daniel Craig might end up being replaced. Not even necessarily replaced, but I think they'd have to essentially cancel his contract and then possibly get him back, or possibly not. But Tom Hardy's been touted as a possible new Bond.
Right.
I can see that could kind of work.
Yeah.
Although there was an interview with him recently, because one thing that may, apparently, this is going to sound more, not necessarily homophobic, but...
I'm not racist, but...
Apparently, generally speaking, it's been implied that the production company has always been loath to have either a gay Bond or a sort of a less than masculine Bond. Right. And Tom Hardy gave an interview recently where someone, I think they either asked him if he was gay or if he'd ever had a relationship with a man. And he said, of course I have, and I'm an actor. I've experimented, I've experimented with everyone and everything, but now I'm, in my 30s, I want to settle down a bit.
Right.
It was the gist, and that's not entirely word for it, but that was pretty... he did very much say, of course I have, I'm an actor.
Okay.
Which is always refreshingly honest. Yeah. But I'm wondering if... Yeah, if that people may start, oh no, can we have a gay Bond? But a gay Bond could be an interesting direction for the character.
Having seen him in Bronson, it was probably he was the instigator, but the other guy had nothing to say about it and had no choice in the matter.
Right,
but prison for you. Wow. It's not real. It's a film, isn't it? I keep forgetting it's not real.
It's not real. Easily fooled. It's all a dream.
Actually, getting back on Inception again.
Yes, you're right.
This is that is one thing. To come away going, that's quite nice. It's the best film I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Where they say, it's all a dream! Because that's the point, isn't it, really?
Yes.
Normally, that's the go-to bad thing about... Okay. That doesn't help, does it? I just sort of mimed them away to my office. Okay, fine.
Bidding adieu to his fair wife.
Indeed.
Yes.
There was a thought there. A nice little thought.
No, it's disappeared. It's the recesses of Jen's tiny mind.
I can feel that silence with another thought.
Like
I'll say another thing, and then you think of the thing that you were going to think of. You can have a little dream. A dream within a dream. Spin your top.
That'd be nice.
And, all I was going to say was, IMDb, it's apparently it's currently the third greatest film of all time.
Yeah, it'll sink. But I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I think Dark Knight is currently at number 12, which I think that's sort of more fans pushing up. Yeah, Inception will sink down. But I think it deserves to be higher than Dark Knight.
I think it's as high as I've seen a recent film for a while, because a lot of them go in. I mean, Toy Story 3 is quite high up in the top 10, I think, isn't it? But apparently, according to that, only Shawshank Redemption and The Godfather are better. So it's better than one of The Godfathers. So, which is an odd... I mean, I can see why people are getting overhyped and who haven't seen it yet. Because if someone's... imagine someone says to you, well, it's not as good as The Godfather. It's better than Godfather Part 2, though. Exactly. That's just clearly rubbish.
It's skewing your scale slightly.
It's not as good as two other films in the world ever.
It is brilliant and loved it a lot, but... A lot of the enjoyment of it for me, and I think a lot of its adulation, is because it's completely original.
Yeah.
Not original in terms of it essentially being a sort of heist movie, but a lot of the ideas in it are original, and it's an original script.
Well, it's Christopher Nolan's first original film since his first one, isn't it? I think.
Yes. Yeah, because what was Memento based on?
I think it was a comic book of some sort.
Okay.
I know it was based on something, but I'm not sure what. It may, in part, it's just annoying that we're at a stage in cinema at the moment where there's one tiny glimmer of originality. Think, hey, finally, something original.
Yeah.
Hopefully it might encourage more people to think, if we come up with a good idea, maybe people will go and see it.
Really celebrates film. I mean, you can't make this any other way.
Oh, yeah, no. You couldn't. I mean, a novel of it wouldn't have anywhere near the same work.
So
I'm looking at some of the reviews of it. Actually, some of the newspapers were a little bit snooty about it.
There seemed to be a way to
like three out of five.
I think just to have an opinion.
Yeah. Well, the film programme, I listened to the Radio 4 film programme, which is a bit very Radio 4. It's lots of mostly either foreign films or art house things and nothing else really matters.
Mm.
And so they gave it a quick 10-second mention and that's all it was. And said, it's I think something like it's diverting and entertaining if you're 12. And apart from that, it's sort of...
That's how you describe Transformers 2.
Trying to be clever and trying to be complex. And I go, it is quite clever and quite complex.
Yeah.
Particularly for a... It's a blockbuster.
Yeah, it's complex, but complex doesn't have to mean confusing. No. So it's not confusing, but it is complex. You've got four layers of dream world, each affecting the other one in different ways. Yeah.
So,
and that's quite complex. No, it doesn't mean it's massively complicated. Humans can't understand it. But it's
expecting calculus going on in the background all the time.
There was nothing in Latin for crying
out. No, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and you can have a complex, but also accessible to the mainstream film. That's what it is.
As ever, my favourite film critic, Mark Kermode, he gave a great, you know, his opinion on it was excellent. And in the same, because he always, I've said this before, he sees himself as a genre critic. So he's criticising it based on what sort of, you know, could be, you know, you can have a good horror film because it's good as a horror film, you know.
Yes.
And so he sees it as a marvellous thing because it's doing well at the box office. Hopefully it will do even better.
Yeah.
And people go and return trips and so on. And it sends a message to Hollywood that you can have a clever blockbuster. Because I don't think there's really been one.
No, not really. In a world of, I mean, Prince of Persia and Sorcerer's Apprentice have both been out this summer, and are both, I haven't seen Sorcerer's Apprentice, Prince of Persia was vaguely enjoyable, but they're both big, you know, meant to be audience-pleasing blockbusters, and they both kind of crashed and burned a bit.
Because it took a studio to sort of, it took Christopher Nolan to have made a success of Dark Knight, before the studio would say, have as much money as you want, make whatever you want.
Yeah.
And it's happened, and it's going to make a ton of money for them.
Yeah, and it's dropped about 40-45% from its opening weekend to the next week, which in Hollywood box office terms really isn't
very
much at
very
all.
Good,
it sounds like a lot, but it's really, I mean, generally speaking, films will drop about 60+. Really awful ones like 75. Yeah. And it's got legs.
The great thing about it is then it sends a message to studios who they're thinking, but it's summer and we're spending, we'll spend, you know, £40 million on a small little, this sort of film. But for a $500 million, it's got to be Transformers 5. It has to be. Or
we've got to be able to get toys. And you've got no Inception Burger King meals out there or anything.
But if people go and see this, then they'll make more of them.
Yes.
Not more Inception films, but more films like this.
And also, coupled with more 3D is apparently starting to lose favour with people.
Right.
Yes. In the more, I mean, someone's charted, I think it's percentage of box office takings from 3D showings of various different 3D films. And Avatar was huge. Most people saw it in 3D. But then you get down to films like Despicable Me, which is in 3D. Right. It's apparently very good, but I've not seen it yet. But fewer and fewer people are going to see the 3D version.
It's not out yet, is it?
Not here. It is in America.
Okay.
And people are more and more people are just thinking, no, I'll just go and see the 2D version because it's not worth the extra few quid. So now, and again, so that studios might just have to listen and think.
Go back to the actual subject matter.
Yes. Maybe come up with a decent plot and not in 3D. And then lots of people go and see it and you'll make more money.
Exactly.
But yes, so, yes. I think that maybe is that roughly the lot.
I think that's pretty much all I have to say.
There's still a lot more to cover that we could go into the ins and outs of how far does the dream go and all that. But for you to enjoy.
Well, yes. There's one question which I did note down, which I think I've now found an answer to, which is why, because the whole point is when you get kicked in the dream above, then you wake up below.
Yes,
sort of into that. So like when the van hits the water, everyone at the level below it in the hotel wakes up and goes into water.
That's right.
But why the point gets made when because the van has two kicks as well. When they crash over the bridge, was meant to be a kick if they're ready,
okay,
and they weren't, or if they're awake because they were asleep in the dream below that one.
Yes,
but they weren't. So then when they wake up, they got the water. That wakes them up. But Arthur is doing his thing in the hotel. He's awake. So when the van crashes through above, why doesn't he get kicked and woken up?
Fair point.
No, yeah, let's stop doing this.
No, maybe he's just pretending and just having a little 5 minutes.
Well, yes, but
snooze.
The possible counter argument is that because of the sedative of the veranda, they might need two kicks at once.
Fair point.
And so because he hasn't been kicked in the dream below, even though he's awake, he might still need a kick to kind of propel it or something like that.
Maybe.
Again, it's ideas like that that you don't need to think about it. You don't need to think about how the kicks all work. But it's all there to discuss if you want to get
it. It doesn't ruin the film. It sort of helps the film that there's stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's all there to work out. And I genuinely think that any points like that can be resolved. Mm. The information is there to work out how it all comes together.
Mm. I honestly believe there's enough planning. It took 10 years to come up with this.
Yeah. He's been writing it. And
so I think he's really thought about this one.
Yes. And yeah, I mean, just the nature of all the dreams. Because they explain, again, second time around makes more sense, how, you know, who's the dreamer and who's the subconscious is filling it and what everyone else is doing there.
And how if these goons, I suppose, are being killed, that it's not actually permanent damage to the dreamer.
It's, yes, it's, yes, you're not killing, yes, off his brain. It's of just course. Ideas in his brain. Yes. But again, but then when you watch the film, you don't need to think about if they're doing damage or who the dreamer is and who the subject is. You just need to know they're in a dream and that's it.
There's a good the Inception infographic online, which is quite well done. Some people have criticised and said, oh, it's like doesn't quite work, which you can find if you want to. But again, it's kind of,
and also, I think it's upside down. Personally, that infographic, because they all start at the bottom and then sort of go up.
True, and Limbo is at the very top, and that's Limbo meant to be down there.
Except, but again, that's only my own interpretation. They don't say, I think, because they talk about going down another level, but no reason you should. Yeah. If it's arguably a higher state of consciousness, you should be going up through the levels. Mm. So,
Oh, there's so much more now I want to say, but
no, go on, we'll throw a scene in.
I'm just thinking about Leonardo Cobb's experiments, when Ariadne comes in and plugs into his experiments, that's what she calls them. And it was all about, is that actually his plan to try and contain Mull into these sort of levels through this lift? Is that the way he normally dreams, or is that literally his conscious effort to try and contain
that's
her?
True. So much as Ariadne designs the levels.
That's why he says don't go down there, because that's what keep her down there.
Actually, I hadn't thought about that. So much as Ariadne designs the levels and then teaches, well, something else actually. People were wondering how the dreams, because we came out of it and one or two people we saw it with were saying, oh, so how do they get the dream worlds into their minds? Oh, well, it must be in the solution, we just don't hear about it. But again, they say that Ariadne designs the levels and then teaches it to whoever's dreaming.
Yeah.
So they just have to remember the entirety of the level. So it could well be that Leonardo DiCaprio is essentially just designing his own dream level, which is a prison. And so then he hopes he can just lock her up in it, and it doesn't work. No, I hadn't thought about that.
Which is,
I'll see it again then.
I think there's so many little intricacies that you can think about it.
You could go, oh, well, does this then mean that that's a dream? For example, when the walls are converging and he's running away, and it's, you know, when you're having those dreams where you're trying to run away and you just can't. It was watching this actual moment where he's trying to get between these two buildings. And who builds a building close to another one?
But it's in Mombasa, it's all sort of slums and weird chancy buildings. So.
But it kind of hints that. Yeah, exactly.
It sows the seed that.
That this is all a bit of a dream. Same as Michael Caine appearing. I mean, there is a sort of an explanation to go enough time has passed. But one moment he's in France.
Yes, true.
The next, and now he's in America. Although,
again, second time around, you realise that when he's talking on the phone, when Leonardo DiCaprio is on the phone to his children, he says, oh, I'm going to send some presents home with Grandpa. And then he turns up to see Michael Caine, he gives him a bag of presents.
Yes.
Which does all imply that Michael Caine has a scheduled trip going back at some point. And we don't know exactly how long passes. But again, that ties into dreams in that we don't know exactly what the timescale is.
Because his conversation with Cobb is quite interesting, because it's like, come back to reality, come back.
Yes.
And it's like, ooh, does that mean?
Yeah, which again is what makes people think that Michael Caine is sort of implanting himself into Leonardo DiCaprio's dreams. But I think then you start going into it too much.
It'd be nice if at the premiere, Marion Cotillard was there and you sort of see her at the corner of your eye and you go, am I in a dream? Is this? And then in the foyer,
she wanders up and stabs someone.
In the foyer, they start playing Je ne regrette rien, and you go, hang on a second. So a trainer banner comes through here.
I think we probably...
Well, that'll do it.
We may have either bored you or fascinated you.
If you've got any other thoughts, you can email us in. We'll pick it up again next... Well, not next time, because what we're going to do is... We may go a little bit quieter.
Because we've got partly a lack of equipment and partly Edinburgh Festival is coming up.
We should be up in Edinburgh. If you're listening and you're going to Edinburgh Festival, then come see my show, please. Because otherwise it's just me and it's embarrassing.
What's it called? When's it
Thank
on?
Thank you very much. Lovely. Well done. You're the voice of the audience. It's called Borderline Racist and it's on at a venue called the Cannons Gate on the Royal Mile at 8:25.
Fair enough.
So there you go.
I'm doing technical support for a play called My Name is Richard, which is on at C2 at a time I can't quite remember.
Similar time,
8:45-ish, so go and see that as well if you're in Edinburgh.
And I'm feeling left out because I haven't got.
You're rehearsing a play.
I'm rehearsing a play. It's just not in Edinburgh. No, but that'll be at the White Bear in Kennington.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Later on this year.
You said you went all posh.
Yeah,
I know. It's restoration.
I see.
No, not that they actually speak like that either. But
very good.
That's
fair
it.
Enough. There you go. There's our
plugs.
Self-whoring.
Lovely stuff. Lovely stuff. So we may be. It may not be every week. Maybe every couple of weeks. I don't know.
Well, because you'll be back. Very end of August, sure. So it's 4 weeks.
Yeah.
We're not going to be able to record anything, probably.
Yes.
But we're going to record a couple of things and put
them out.
So
there'll be specials out between now and sort of early September.
Yeah.
So have a good August.
There'll be a couple of things to listen to.
You will hear our recording voices.
Yeah, between them. But yeah, good. Hope this is entertaining.
Okay.
And we will speak to you at some point.
Will do.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.